So we'll wait just a couple of more minutes as people filter in. I hope there's some sense of interest. I can't overemphasize how important that word is in terms of our authentic path forward. It really is the heart. That's not a it's not a conditioned phenomenon. Interest comes from something beyond ourselves, where we feel on a path to completion. And so it's a very important aspect of knowing to monitor ourselves going forward. If do we have interest in this or curiosity in its more investigative form? So good morning, everyone. Good morning to you. What a delight to see you all. I wish I had the time to individually say hello to each one of you. So collectively, I'd do so. So you just feel the quiet. You're never closer to your essence than when you're still and quiet. Because as I was, we're unformed. We need words to convince us who we are and what the world is. That's the dialogue that we constantly place upon the world and reciprocate by having the world be what we want it to be. And thus, the two halves of the boundary are formed, myself and the world. But at some point, you see it. When you see it, you can't pretend you didn't see it. It's like discovering a Christmas present before you unwrap. You saw it in the closet. You can't pretend when you're unwrapping the present to be surprised. I mean, you can pretend, but it's not authentic. And as Dharma moves us forward, we begin to perceive what's there is very skewed in terms of our history of knowing what the world is and ourselves within it. And it's very difficult to pretend it isn't during the day. It gets in you. And so then it just gets in you more and more as you allow it. And the more quiet you become, the more it's allowed to fulfill, to fill you completely. And that journey takes time. So it's not a rushed, impatient scenario. It's a very, okay, let me just open to this. It's here. It's real. Let me just see what's there. Well, I started my Dharma talk before I. I'll go on and on. So, in any sense, okay. So, let me just read something to you as a way to start this thing. Again, I was mentioning yesterday that today's pointings, Dharma pointings, will be more nuanced and therefore, more revelatory, but also perhaps more confusing. So just listen to it intellectually if it's confusing to you. Just try to get a sense of what in the hell this guy is talking about, knowing that it's true. I mean, I'm not telling you anything. I'm not reading something. It's true because it's been seen, it's been understood, it's been known. So I'm going to start out with something. I love how the confluence of science and wisdom go hand in hand. And this is from Scientific American, October 6, 2022, if you'd like to look it up. And it says, first of all, just be patient. You know, this is the top, this is Alice in Wonderland world we're talking about here. So be patient with yourself as we travel this unsettling and difficult terrain. Just listen and see if you can understand the implications of what are being said. One of the most unsettling discoveries in the past half century is that the universe is not real. Well, I think it is unsettling. Real in this context means that objects have definitive properties independent of observation. An apple is red even when no one is looking. Investigations at the frontier of quantum mechanics have determined that the evidence shows that objects lack definitive properties prior to being seen. So an apple isn't red unless you look at it. Isn't that amazing? It isn't even an apple. It isn't even round. It's nothing until it is perceived. I don't know where science came up with that. Who was behind that observation and that understanding, but it was done through scientific methodology. It wasn't just guesswork. And in a moment, I'm going to give you the equivalent of the wisdom's point of view within that statement. But I just want to stop with that for a minute. Mean, does that instill curiosity or fear? See, I just. Just let's be honest with ourselves. If it's fear, so be it. That means I'm resistant to opening to that. If you're curious, it means you want more, basically. You want to be fed the truth of what the world looks like. But you don't want to push yourself into that truth. You want to investigate it at your own speed and time. So curiosity or fear, and each of us should know that if there's a hesitation or whether there's a movement towards it. The point is that what that is telling us is that we live in an assumed world. That pulls the rug out from everything. I mean, just that pulls it out. We always assume that the world is what it is, whether we're looking at it or not. It's not determined by my observation of it for its characteristics and for its stability. But this particular scientific article says it is. I mean, to me, in order to hold the world together, an apple's got to be an apple even when I'm not looking at it. But science and spiritual wisdom indicate it is no longer what it appears to be when it is not being seen. And we are not what we think we are unless we are seen. Did you hear that? One establishes the other. The world isn't what it is unless it's being seen, and I'm not what I am or believe myself to be unless I am making contact with that seen. They arise together. Now, if we have entered Buddhism, one of the beauties of Buddhism is that it tells you where this thing's going. It says three characteristics. You know, one of the characteristics is anatta, selflessness. And we think, okay, some point I'll come upon that. Or maybe not. But when we do come upon it, which is inevitable if we're sincere, then it's going to be startling to us to see it. I remember it first happened to me almost 50 years ago, and tears. They were just tears. I couldn't believe I was. I mean, I don't know what I was tearing about, but it felt like my old world was gone when I saw it. Because, but what helped me stabilize was the fact that Buddha said, this is what you're going to see. You stay with this process, you're going to see this. And sure enough, I didn't quite believe it when I read it, you know, because you think, okay, so I don't know what it means not to be who I am, but let me just be patient with it. And it came upon me. So the truth is out there, and you'll come upon it in your own time. And the truth is that the object and the self are held together by concepts only. That's when we conceptually overlay the world, which I will say fundamentally is its essence. Its essence is not concepts. So when we conceptually put something on top of it, it creates the sense of knowing it, and the knower of it rise together. The knower of it and the knowing of it. The knowing, the knower of it and the knowing of it, right? That happens at the moment of contact. It's funny, I was just thinking about this talk earlier, and I'm very familiar with the Buddha's dependent origination, which the first key to dependent origination, codependent arising, is contact. And I thought, okay, well, that makes sense. Before I know what something is, there has to be contact. No, that's, see, I had an insight that contact is the absolute first, is the advent of myself in the world. That's the point in which it all begins. It's not I'm beginning, I already am, and then I have contact. No, I am not until contact. The world is not until contact. And that's a whole different way of understanding contact. Because if you look around, you're always in contact. Wherever you are in the world, you're making contact. That's why you're always I, you, us, we are always formed within ourself and our knowledge base, in our separation and our division and our boundary. That comes with contact. Those are the assumptions we've made about the world, and we hold the world to those assumptions. So what I'm trying to show here is that the world and ourselves arise upon the contact out of nothing. Oh, that's a hard one. Out of nothing. Nothing doesn't, nothing is not nothing. Okay, so the essence of life, when we try to observe it, can't be observed. That's why we call it nothing. We call it empty. But emptiness, another word for it, which I like better, is incomprehensible. We arise out of the inconceivable. That's really, but the inconceivable isn't nothing. I don't know how, English won't allow me to insert a new word in there. So it sounds contradictory. So I'm going to read you now the third Zen patriarch, just a couple of paragraphs, verses on faith mind. It's an interesting title, by the way, faith mind. I could never quite understand, but I think I have a sense now. And he's fifth century. And there's a little pamphlet you can get online, or you can look it up, that gives you the whole his whole discourse, which is just beautiful. But let me read this and just listen to it in respect to the Scientific American October 6, 2022 article. So this is the Zen Patriarch. When no discriminating thoughts arise, the old mind ceases to exist. When thought objects vanish, the thinking subject vanishes. As when the mind vanishes, objects vanish. Things are objects because of the subject mind. The mind subject is such because of things object. Understand the relativity of these two and the basic relative reality. Understand the relativity of these two and the basic reality, the unity of emptiness. In this emptiness, this incomprehensibility, those are my words, the two are indistinguishable, and each contains in itself the whole world. If you do not discriminate between coarse and fine, you will not be tempted to prejudice and opinion and separate those two worlds asunder. I mean, that could have been paragraph two of the Scientific American article. It just uses words that are different. But it's amazing how that is approachable within ourselves. We can see that in ourselves. We can come to that understanding without reading the Scientific American or on our own. And it's the foundation of how the universe, what the universe is, and we are within it. And within this world of subject and object, we set boundaries to keep discriminating ourselves from the objects we created. It's a conceptual idea that's imposed upon the world the moment we perceive it. So the thought of us being separate from the world and all the ways that we hold ourselves in contrast to the things of the world, which when we're silent, all come together because there's no contrast in silence. But when we're noisy and speaking and investing our descriptions into things, we also have to have boundaries between the knower of that and the thing that is known. That is why knowledge is such a basic tool for thingness to be. Unless I have knowledge of something, right? The knowledge forms a boundary around it. Let's get this point. This is an important point. Once I put knowledge upon something, once I get to know something, now I have a relationship with it in memory, and it's boundaried. It can only be itself. It cannot be anything else but itself, what my mind says it is through the knowledge I have of it. And so if I have knowledge of many things, then I have a lot of distinctions that I can make in reality, and I navigate those distinctions and use them in accordance to what my knowledge says the way I should. And so we navigate the world through the boundaries we've set upon each thing. Now, if you don't know what something is, you still have a boundary. You say, oh, I don't know what that is. That's a boundary. That's a knowing of something as being individualized. It's just that we don't know what it is. We've labeled it as an unknown instead of a known. So you say, well, what about the things I don't, you know, like what kind of bird is that? Well, you first of all, you know it's a bird. And second, once you ask that question, likely you'll go to the internet and find out what that bird is. So you want to keep expanding your knowledge outward so to more refined areas so that we can particularize the knower as well. So we create a world of thingness through boundary setting, boundary after boundary. Everything is surrounded and sectioned off by a guardrail, the guardrail of knowing, leading to ownership, leading to quarrels, leading to conflict, leading to suffering. I didn't want that. I just wanted to know what it was. And I wanted to own it or have it. And see, to own it or to have something has to be external. And so we use our own individuation to gain access to what we have made the world into, forced it to be. And now we can delight in its, in acquiring it. Isn't that amazing? I always wondered why the things we create are ephemeral. Why they change? What's Nietzsche? Where did that one come from? It's because they're mind made, and the mind can't steady itself. It can't hold on. It's always in motion. It's always moving. It's always evolving. It's the only thing that evolves. And once we've placed our ideas upon reality, sure enough, the individual objects within that reality are going to change. The house is going to fall down. The wind's going to blow. The trees, blah, 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 all that. All that's going to, because the mind that has created it can't sustain its creation forever. So within again, the common consciousness, we're talking about the common consciousness of human beings, the collective consciousness. It's not just mine, I can't hold anything steady, but the collective consciousness, which is all mind, the mind of this species as a single entity, you might say, and we're a part of that collective, can't sustain it either. I mean, a tree law, this lasts longer than that, but that doesn't mean that they all aren't going to go somewhere. They all aren't going to fade away because the mind can't sustain that. It just isn't. Look at your mind. Look at my mind. It can't sustain a thought. It can't sustain an idea, and it's off moving into something else. So as a collective, it's the same thing. Isn't that amazing? See, a Nietzsche isn't ascribed to the mind. It's ascribed to reality. Well, reality doesn't change. That which is essential reality, is changeless. So if it's changing, it's got to come from the mind. There are only two things going on here. There's the essence of reality, which is changeless and open, magnanimous and wondrous, wondrous beyond description, incomprehensible. And there is mind, which is it's conceptual. And the conceptual can't last. Conceptual is just an idea, it doesn't last. So you put a conceptual idea upon the essence, well, the conceptual idea has to melt away and leaving the essence, but the essence can't be seen because we haven't can't make it an object. So the essence, what is fundamentally true, is going to remain a mystery forever. You're not going to be able to see it. And we only invite permanency to what we can see, even though it's not permanent. We invite ourselves into the world of ephemeral change, because if we just allowed ourselves to be who we were in essence, we wouldn't be able to fulfill our desires and needs. So let me just stop and look at the insanity of this, please. Just get the insanity down. I mean, it's not, we're not, there's no maliciousness. There's no evil intent here. It's just crazy. And when you start opening the world, it's not without purpose. I guess real craziness would be all of this without purpose. I mean, the purpose is that is. You can't ever really know reality unless you've gone through this whole process. Then you know it because you've participated in its own understanding. So that's what reality wants, is it wants us to understand it, really, to have the wisdom of it, to become it with the knowledge of what it is. That's my interpretation. So we create thingness, boundary after boundary. And then, of course, the keystone boundary is self and other. Work on that boundary and they all collapse because they're all held together for some sense of personal assumption, personal need. But we've got to evolve out of this now. Okay, that was fun. Or wasn't fun for most of us, but we did it anyway. And but we've gone through it now. You know, this is the most, it's, you can't wait for the next invention, because look at the inventions we've have counted on, the internet and computers. They haven't, I think we would be better off without the internet. They don't work in our favor. Virtual reality, where you're having a romance with a virtual object, is that sanity? It's not helping us. And now we've got to step out of this thing because it's just, it's imploding upon itself. And so let's step out into truth. Why not? That's the only other thing there is. There's the mind and there's truth. Because all boundaries that we impose are obstacles to empty, clear, spacious awareness. All boundaries. All boundaries believed are obstacles to empty, clear, spacious awareness. Invisible to the boundaries we create is that essence that holds it all together, that out of which ideas arise. Let's go to the source of ideas then, rather than being compelled by them. I want to talk a moment about thinning. I bring it up more and more because most of us don't have access to the truth, the way I've described the third Zen patriarch. And even though it's there, and if you want it, if you're curious about it, it will come. It will come. And the reason it's not coming is because we're not curious enough about it. You've settled into a new reality called Dharma, which has alleviated a lot of pressures and a lot of insults and a lot of things the mind does to itself. And that seems good enough. Maybe for this lifetime, that is good enough, but it's not the end. It's not the end. The rest of my life, I will be talking about the next phase, the next evolution, and the next evolution of consciousness. So it's going to be this, know this and stay away from me. Because it's so important. If somebody comes to me and says something psychological, I'll work with them psychologically and to the limit of my knowledge, but and I won't give them this. I said, don't forget about all that. Just see, don't, I won't do that. But my formal presentations will be about this subject. Okay, so thinning is a way to get from where we are towards ultimate reality without awakening prior to that. I mean, there are moments that the veil vanishes and you see reality as it is, and that gives you an absolute conclusive understanding of the essence. Right? Absolute understanding. Never doubt it again, never. And you know exactly where you're going, although the veil of the mind comes back on to interfere, it doesn't matter. You know what the mind is and you know what the truth is. Okay. Until we get to that point, which probably most of the people who are in Dharma haven't had is you thin. You get a sense that the and you so thinning is working in contrary to the self's logic, working contrarily to the self's logic, allowing the boundaries of self and other to become permeable, to become. So the first one is that the sense of self, the egoic sense of self, is egocentric. So as the thinning happens, we start feeling the alternative of inclusivity, of sharing, of generosity, of giving our time and offering our wisdom or whatever it is. You feel that come through. Just motivate that for it. Don't fall back as the logic of your existence as egocentrism. Don't do that. That just takes you back into more and more density of thought. Not helpful. So just keep bringing out that sense of being inclusive, inclusivity. I don't care what the politics of the time, this is the way to be a decent, kind individual. And this world needs that more than any new invention. Let's be kind. Okay, another thinning thing. The sense of self knows itself as a continuous, as a view. It has views and opinions everywhere. Prejudice, basically. Ideas about people, ideas about things. Laced in its more extreme form, we call prejudice, but in its more latent form, a view. And then we have a view of the world, we have a view of ourselves, we have a view. Okay, so start releasing or questioning your assumptions. This, I'm not sure. You know, we're always so determined and forceful in our opinions as if our lives depended upon them, which to some people it does, in the sense that I'm nothing unless I have views and opinions about everything. But just bring in some not knowing. Work on the prejudice that are still within all of us people where they're most obvious. Okay? Just start. Sit down with those, that individual, that race, that gender, that whatever. Just see the human quality. Let the kindness come out. That shatters prejudice. And so releasing our prejudice is a thinning, a very important thinning activity. And then another one I would like to talk about just briefly is and I've said it many, many times already, but is replacing the need to solidify what we know through the knowledge we have of it. Remain curious about that thing. What the mind says is not the end description of what it is. I mean, you can even see that if you just are quiet with it, that it becomes something other than what I know it to be. So spend time releasing the knowledge we have of something. You're not going to become ignorant and, oh, if I don't have the knowledge, I'm not knowledgeable or whatever it is that we're afraid of being. Instead, you're inviting a curiosity into what you know, and that breaks the hold of knowing. That breaks the hold of knowing. And that's a thinning. That's a, it's a, it's an, it's an activity of thinning. And we put it in activity, the cells of our body, which are part of the aliveness of the whole thing. They're not separate. The body's not separate from the mind. The mind-body experience now begins when it's an activity. It's more than just saying it to yourself as a mental thought. You're putting in activity. It changes the cells of your body. And that's what thinning process is. And that's what I'm teaching now outside of just being aware of the mind, letting go. It needs to come into activity. You can live decades within the knowledge of how the mind works and that letting go, and then come out of that trance of meditation and be just as reactive as you've ever been for decades. Unless we put it into activity. Because it becomes another thing you know. I know about all that. I've heard that Dharma talk before. So we're not trying to, by eliminating the boundaries the self assumes to be true, the sense of self is non-existent. It depends upon the boundaries in order to survive as in an idea, as a survive as an idea, a separate thing. So we do not have to destroy the sense of self. Now listen. We do not have to destroy the sense of self. It is already non-existent. We think of ourselves as real, and I'm going to go through this process in which I will be eliminated. No. No. You think of yourself as real, and you are non-existent. You never were existent. This is a confluence of different factors that makes us think we are existent. You release those ideas and you're non-existent. That does nothing to scramble you, the sense of your existence, of your aliveness. Sounds paradoxical. Trust me. The part you lose isn't worth retaining. The part that remains is. Because it's fundamental. See, all we're releasing is the need to keep misinterpreting the information. That's what we're doing. That's what we do. That's what ignorance misinterprets the information. Wisdom interprets it correctly. And all we will ever find is sensation followed by assumption. We don't like to think of ourselves as the manifestation of an idea. So the absence of self, let me assure everybody, does not mean the loss of sensibility. It is not an altered state of mind. It is not a state of chaos. It is not confusion. All it means is that the misinterpretation of a sensation as being separate is seen for just what that is. A sensation meaning nothing. A world in the sense of ourself, which has so long seemed irreconcilable, are actually one and the same thing. Isn't that amazing? So we're never going to be able to solve the boundaries that we set between ourselves and everything else. We're never going to be able to enter in true inclusivity by believing in ourselves as being something real outside of thought. And this is the essence of where, this is the essence of where evolution is moving us as a species. Have I lost you? Are you curious? Okay. Okay, what's the next thing on our agenda here? is a break. Wait a minute. Break? Oh, talk, sit, instruction. We'll have a short sitting before we take a break. And like this, just won't be guided. Won't be guided. Just a short sitting. Just let what the let the words settle themselves out. Relax. Observe and allow. very gently, I'm going to bring us out of the meditation with the Bing bell ringing. I wanted to give a half an hour to, you could use it in whatever way you wish, but my intention is to, for you to get outside a little bit and just get a, just, well, this is like open, let's open up this thing, open it up, you know? Even staying inside can be a little too contained. So allow yourself, you know, we have half an hour before a guided meditation. So allow yourself to take a little walk or just to feel life in a broader extent. This has been pretty heady morning already, so okay. Be well and see you at 10:30 for a guided inquiry.